This is A Conversation. It's a podcast that takes a look behind the scenes and between the lines of the contemporary art worlds. I'm Michael Shaw. Welcome to the show. It's episode 221 with Robin Sembalist. She is a social media consultant and social media influencer. She was an editor at Art Forum back in the 80s, eventually became an editor at Art News, and then she made the switch, the transition over to the social media realm, and now consults with museums, galleries, individuals, and mentors young folks on growing their brand, social media strategies, etc. She's got a lot of followers as well. She's got 45 plus K on Instagram. And in fact, we spend a lot of our conversation talking about Instagram and Instagram strategies. I hope that's something that you want to learn more about. Certainly more of us are getting to be on that platform than the other platforms in my experience. Let me know if I'm wrong about that. The website for this podcast is theconversationpod.com, where you can check out images of Robin doing her thing, as well as one of the fantastic feeds on Instagram that she recommends, Bodega Cats of Instagram. And it's not, I'll give you a hint, it's not a cat in this picture. So definitely go check that out. It's a keeper. This is a relatively short conversation, which is actually good because there are a number of things that I want to bring to your guys' attention this episode, starting with the fact that I'm very excited to announce we just joined a podcast network. Just as we speak, it is being launched out into the world. It's called Cultural Bandwidth. Now, what is a podcast network, for those of you not familiar? It's basically an umbrella under which a number of podcasts coexist and cross-promote each other. And this is a cultural and art-based network. Other networks, by the way, that are the big-name folks that you may have heard of include Panoply, Gimlet, and Earwolf. There are many others, but that gives you an idea of what a podcast network example is. So Cultural Bandwidth, and you can find us at culturalbandwidth.com. Go check us out. There's six of us in this initial group, and it was started by Eric Wall and Andreas Olsen, who are, funny enough, both Americans, but living in Scandinavia. Eric in Stockholm and Andreas in Copenhagen. And they took it upon themselves to reach out to a bunch of folks and start a network. And I'm very grateful that they reached out to me because somebody who's a listener of the show said, hey, have you ever thought about starting an art podcast network? And I thought, well, yeah, that sounds good, but where do I start? So thankfully, I only could start thinking about it, and then Eric and Andreas reached out to me. So huge thanks to them. And to let you know about some of the other shows, one of them is one that is hosted by somebody you may already be familiar with. It is Jenny Danielson, who you may remember from episode 214, the conversation at Paper Plastic Cafe in Los Angeles. So her podcast is The Art Word. She is one of my fellow Cultural Bandwidth members, along with Eric's By the Way, and Andreas is the Undergang Armchair. There's also Art Attack with Lizzie and Justin, and finally, Lidkunst, which is a Danish podcast in Danish. So that one might not be at the top of your list, but do check out the others. Let us know what you think. I'm assuming they're going to be spreading the word on their shows about our show. So if you are an art podcast aficionado, now you have several more to add to your queue. So that's one of the pieces of exciting news. A couple of others involve my finally getting together an episode index for this show, which I will tell you more about on the back end. And I want to tell you about a new wrinkle in this show that I'm going to try to add, and that is the Conversation Podcast Hotline. So I'm going to tell you more about that on the back end. I want to get you guys calling into this show with your comments, thoughts, questions, stories, etc. I will get more into that on the back end. So for now, let's get into the conversation about social media, Instagram, a little bit of Twitter, and so on. Thank you guys very much for being here. I appreciate it. If you're a newcomer to the show, welcome. And I will talk to you more on the back end. Stick around, and thank you again. I did want to go back to, and this is something that I was going to ask you about anyway, this whole exchange that you typically have where people ask you, how did you get so many followers? And in fact, you have in your about statement, you describe how you essentially marshaled the forces of journalism, you know, the experience you had in journalism, and translate to the tools of social media. And I guess I just want to clarify maybe more specifically, when you started out, I mean, I assume it was kind of a gradual thing. It wasn't like all of a sudden, you know, overnight, you know, you were a social media influencer. But did you have a mentor? Were you an autodidact in terms of, you know, I'm going to figure out how to master this social media thing? You know what I mean? What was a combination of those kinds of things?
Well, I would say that I was working somewhat with the interns in Art News at the time. I think when I started these social media feeds, I'm not sure the staff was actually quite on board. Mm-hmm. I started with Tumblr myself, and I was very interested to see how information was shared and disseminated on Tumblrs, because I think in the end I had something like 150,000 followers between my two Tumblrs, but the way to get real traffic, just as in a lot of other social, is to be reposted by someone with more followers. And it was my first experience with looking at social media and all of these different micro communities that exist within it and that communicate in all these different ways, essentially using images. Mm-hmm. This is the new thing, that people are talking to each other using these pictures.
Yeah.
No matter how many other words that you have. And then I got onto Twitter pretty early, and only after that is then when I got on Instagram in maybe 2013. But I think I was kind of specific about it in a couple of ways, because one thing I thought was, I'm going to make this service journalism in a certain way, because what I'm doing is I only post from exhibitions that are on view that I see. Mm-hmm. So people tell me all the time, oh, I'm going to go to Chelsea. Let me check in and see what Robin's seen. I'm going to the Lower East Side. What's Robin looking at? So that's a kind of usefulness of it, where people look and they can get a kind of picture of the art scene. But at the same time, it's a kind of more diverse picture than you might get in a lot of more mainstream sources, because I'm also going to a lot of culturally specific spaces and smaller spaces that might get missed when most of the mainstream media coverage focuses on the market. Mm-hmm. And I think that the other thing I do is I try and humanize artists, and this also comes from Art News, of course, running the artist portrait. So I'd like to shoot portraits of artists and meet them and talk about their work. And I think people really enjoy seeing that, because a lot of people like to see what artists look like. It's a way of demystifying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and continue on with Instagram. Speaking of finding friends or communities, what would be a good way to start doing that? I mean, I don't really have an inkling as to where that starts. I mean, you're talking about a group that's already established, and you're talking about colleagues that are having conversations, and then civilians, as you put it, who are then sort of following along. But what about for the individual? What does that look like? You know, I mean, contemporary art is a big umbrella, you know, so where maybe would a contemporary artist start to narrow down their community?
Well, the thing is that these services make it kind of easy for you, because they're constantly trying to feed you that. So the first thing is you turn on your Instagram and it wants to feed you your Facebook friends.
Mm.
Right? So even right there, they're giving you examples. Well, say you don't want to do that because you're starting over and you don't need everyone from high school on your Instagram.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
So then you might decide to go in and look up a couple of people that you admire, some artists that you find interesting. Oh, look, here's Ebony Patterson. She's on Instagram. Well, let's see who she follows and who follows her. So that's
right.
Your first little breadcrumb trail,
right,
is to go and poke around and see who people are following, who's liking their pictures, and who's commenting.
Yeah.
the minute that you start liking things, it starts suggesting other things
yeah.
that are liked by a certain kind of percent. You know, it goes through all these different interconnections in these famous algorithms so that if enough people that you're connected to like the other thing, it can attempt to serve it to you type
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right.
That is a not very well spoken definition.
I think that's very clear. Here's where I think I haven't done enough work or invested enough in Instagram, and hopefully people listening are agreeing with me. But one thing that I have noticed is that if I look at somebody's feed, you can just see it from the thumbnails and generally decide, you know, this looks like somebody that's intriguing to follow. Would you agree with that general way of approaching adding new people?
I absolutely agree with what you just said. And it's kind of like this 3-second rule that we used to have back in the magazine days where they would tell you that on the newsstand, you had kind of 3 seconds to capture people's attention with your cover lines and your picture.
Right.
And that's kind of what happens in social media. Because have you ever been in an opening and then two people are, oh, you're on Instagram. What's your handle? And then there's this awkward pause and the person's like, you gonna follow me or what? So the best defense of that is to have a beautiful grid where people look at it and they say, well, this person's obviously making an effort. This is intentional. They edited their photos. It looks like they're really trying to share something with us. Then people will want to follow you. But if you're posting 20 examples of the same thing or 20 yeah. pictures of your cat, not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
Then people are going to be like your cat's cute, but I've seen cats. So tell me something I don't know.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, I have a nice little list here of specific, even more specific questions. So if you'll bear with me and you can tell me if any of these get tedious or predictable, but I think you're going to find them challenging in some cases. At least I hope so.
Okay.
All right. So here's number one, regularity. Now I'm going to start with you because I was kind of surprised for somebody who is such a social media influencer, has a big following, that you post a lot. I was told by an artist who I know, this was a couple years ago, so I know it, you know, everybody's got a different theory, but I'm just going to tell you where I sort of started. She had 10,000 followers at the time herself, and I said, all right, how often do you post? She said, once a week, you know, very consistent in terms of what the subject is. And that's how she had been doing. I was like, okay, that sounds reasonable to me. I've since gone a little bit off that. You know, I do maybe a couple times a week. But here's the question. You seem to post a lot. How much is that a strategy? And how often to post as a guideline for different types of accounts, depending on, you know, whether you're Robin Sembilest or whether you're, you know, Joe Schmo Artist?
Well, here's the thing. The numbers in themselves don't get you anywhere. I say this to the museums. There's nothing in your mission that says to get more Facebook likes. Even mine, even though I like the numbers, I like seeing how many followers I have and the likes. But what I'm more interested in is the who. And this is the same thing with the artist. If you're on social media and you're an artist, you're on to share the kind of work that you do and see maybe, and you're the kind of larger goals might be to find people to write about you, to show your work, to pay you to work, to hire you to make a mural, to partner with, or just to meet because you think they're cool.
Right.
So in answer to how much content to post, I would say it depends how much good content you have. So say, for example, you're on a trip and you're going to a bunch of new museums you've never been to.
Mm-hmm.
You might have 6-8 pictures in there. You were never at the Tate, whatever it is, right? You're going around London. But if you're working in your studio, you might not. What I normally tell people is shoot a lot and then don't post most of it.
Right. Right.
So it depends how much interesting content you have. You might have a day when you're an artist that you have an awesome picture from your studio that you felt like sharing. You might go to an event that evening or see a friend's opening and you might want to share that. And then you might go to a museum show. I mean, there's so many different kinds of things that you could share. You might be supporting a charity. You might be giving a shout out to a friend who's doing something. There's so many different kinds of content. The one thing you don't want to do is paste the same content over and over again.
Right.
And this is why I still compare it to a magazine, because people do that, right? So
yeah.
Then it's like saying, I'm your subscriber. I already saw that content. What
yeah.
makes you think I'm going to want to see another picture of a different angle in your studio of the same painting when you haven't told me what you're even doing?
Right, right, right. One thing I noticed from my own experience is that I very much was following your guideline in terms of wait until you have something that's worth posting before you post it. But I went like a good 10 days to 2 weeks between posts, and I noticed that it felt like I had lost some momentum. Is that about right from your perspective? In other words, if you wait too long, are you kind of losing your fans, followers?
Well, you're not going to lose followers if you don't post. You just won't be present. So what
right.
happens is this.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't post a lot, when you do post, it just doesn't seem to get fed to as many people. Again,
mm-hmm.
I don't have that in the kind of official language from the social media feeds, but this is kind of how it works. And it's like everything, that there has to be you do want to have a certain consistency to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people do tend to get obsessed, because it's like, should it be 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock? Should it be, you know, Mondays or Tuesdays? And it's like, look, use common sense. When are most of your followers online? At
yeah.
3 a.m? No. So
yeah.
post in the time when most of them are more likely to see them. And again, you can outfox this all you want, but in the end, it comes to this. If you have some great content, it's going to do well, right? If you're trying to really share something that's meaningful, that's a great image, that's showing people what they haven't seen before, all of these different reasons. And that is more important than whether you post 2 or 3 a week or once a week or once every 10 days. It's really about how good it is and whether you're feeding something to people that they want to eat. Because
well said.
Otherwise, it doesn't matter how much or how little. If they don't like what you're serving for dinner, they're just not going to want to eat it.
Love that metaphor. Thank you. Okay, here's a big one. Likes and followers. Are likes as important as followers? My sense from reading between the lines of your own feed, you know, and you just sort of answered this a little earlier, I think, is that you don't need to be hypersensitive to the number of likes. On the other hand, just to play the other side, how much should one build their future posts based on the relative popularity of prior posts?
I think that what happens is that you can improve your likes if you have a picture that's well edited and kind of good looking to the eye. I call it felicitous, a picture that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to get you likes.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you want to be more concerned with your message. What are you trying to tell people?
Right.
This is the thing that matters,
right.
Not how many likes. Now, obviously, if things do well, you could post your cat one day and it could do really well.
Yeah.
So then you're going to be like, oh, I should just keep posting my cat. But why? What are you telling people? I think if you were an artist having a show, I would be more concerned with how can I make good the thing that I want to tell people?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How can I make it so that the people that I really want to see this, which are the journalists, the critics, the collectors, the curators, all the other the other artists, how am I going to get this to people's faces so they come into my show?
Yeah.
That's the thing that I want to know how to do as an artist. If it's 10 more likes or 50 more likes, it's nice to see what kind of picture.
Yeah.
But in the end, you want to look under those names who are liking it and see if those people are interesting to you, right?
Right, right, yeah. Yeah, and I think you've already answered my following question, which is whom should I follow, not in terms of whom I enjoy following so much as strategic following. And I think you, if not explicitly, implicitly answered that already by describing, if you're an artist, who are the people that, you know, you should have in your radar, the curators and so on, the gallerists, et cetera. Is that about right?
I think that's true.
So then getting back to the who should I follow, was I a fair assessment that the people that we want to be following are the relevant professional parties? Is there anything else that you wanted to add to that?
I would say you would want to be following people who have good social, because sometimes the relevant professional parties might actually have boring Instagrams, and then you don't have to follow them, even if they're important people.
Right, right, right. Got it. Okay.
And then there might be people who aren't quote-unquote important people but have interesting content. So, yes, for work you want to follow influential people, but you also want to consume this the same way you consume any other content for entertainment, is you want to find people that post cool stuff.
Yeah. Can you think off the top of your head somebody that is definitely not a social media influencer or a big wig in the art world that yet nonetheless has a very interesting feed that you would recommend?
Bodega Cats of Instagram?
David Katz of Instagram?
No, Bodega Cats.
Bodega Cats. Got it. Okay. I thought it was a
really
cat
good
thing. Got it. Great. Thank
no,
you.
No, it's a very good feed. Bodega
okay
Cats of Instagram.
Okay, excellent.
I'm
adding them today. Excellent. All right. So on the flip side, if I find it either annoying or triggering following a certain account, is it okay to unfollow? And I'm just going to add to that. Let me just add to that.
There's a new thing you can do where you can actually hide them without unfollowing them.
Oh, like, sweet. How do you do that?
You go in there and somewhere it says hide.
Huh.
Let me see.
Okay. Where is the hide? Is it pretty intuitive?
I'm looking for it now.
Okay, great.
It might just be in the stories.
Mm-hmm.
So okay, I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, so it might just be a story thing.
The point is
that
if you don't want to see someone's content, don't like the pictures.
Right.
If you want to have someone, you can have a friend with 100 followers.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of friends like that, very small followings, but I make sure to like all of their pictures, and then they're served to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if you kind of want someone to fade into the background, then don't engage with their content, and you
right
probably won't see it as much.
Got it. Okay. All right. Here's an even more in the weeds question, perhaps. What about the people you notice who follow you and maybe like one post related to them, but then you never see their handle in your feed? So in other words, from a poster's perspective, as opposed to from a follower's perspective, I seem to be a type of account that I don't know if you're familiar with, but I have a not tiny number of followers, but I have a lot of empty calories. You know what I mean? Like, the people who engage with me in percentage to how many followers I have seems to be pretty modest. So all that to say, if I notice that somebody's following me and then I never see them again in my feed, should I just leave it that way or should I unfollow them? You know what I mean? Is there any, do you just have to lament?
No, that seems like a lot of work.
Right.
Not sure what the gain is. What's
yeah
the gain?
Yeah, no. I guess there's no gain. I guess there's no gain. It's just maybe a recognition.
But what I would be doing is focusing on getting content out that I want people to see.
Yeah.
That I'm sharing for a reason, because people will think it's cool or interesting, and then I'm consuming content. If people engage with me, again, this is all, I call it micro-networking. Each one of these little gestures that happen, like liking a picture, is just one little piece of what's happening,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that it's also a way that this is a kind of social lubrication. So another use of it is actually, this is really useful if you're a shy person.
Yeah.
Because instead of going up and having to say, were you in Basel? Were you in Miami? How was your Christmas? Then you have their feeds. You can say, oh, it sounds like you just saw this show at the Modern, or it sounds like you just started to throw some pots in your studio. There's some kind of content in there to ask pictures about. And again, instead of these numbers and worried about who's liking this and who's liking that, the point is to use the people that you are connecting with and connect with them in real life and figure out how you're having conversations with pictures instead of wondering that someone might like your picture one day and not another day, because that wondering is just time wasted, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't matter. Because the other thing you have to remember is that people aren't served your content chronologically, so that the fact that they might want one of your pictures, they might never even see your other pictures. Just worry about putting good things up and don't obsess about who's liking this one and who's liking that one.
Yeah, well said, and I want to revisit the general approach to social media in a little bit after we move on from Instagram. But speaking of the social lubrication and what you were just talking about in terms of the conversations, is there anything you would add to generating some good conversation in terms of comments. It seems that obviously very, you know, provocative or noteworthy images can do that on their own, but sometimes it seems that people's captions tend to have a big role in that, like particularly impassioned captions tend to create more conversation than more neutral ones. Is there anything that I'm leaving out that you want to add to that description?
Again, it depends what you're trying to say.
Mm-hmm,
it
mm-hmm.
depends what you're talking about. When do you have passion? Things you're passionate about. If you're not passionate about a thing, then why would you fake a passionate conversation just to get comments when now people think that you're not who you think you are?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing you can do is be the real you.
Right.
The minute you start trying to be passionate just to be passionate, it's going to look fake, because the main thing on here that's important is authenticity. So again, rather than thinking about the comments, this is the same thing with the likes. These are all micro things that mm-hmm. in terms of what I do, maybe if you're a brand and you're ChapStick or any something, Cat Chow or something, where you really care about the comments and because you're working with numbers that are thousands and millions of people, maybe you want to be tracking that so you can plan it. But again, for the art world we're talking about and the uses we're talking about, sometimes the comments can just be like, hey, my friend, do you want to go to this show? Yeah, how about Saturday? No, Saturday's not good. Do you want to try and go Thursday? And sometimes people have a whole conversation in your comments, and then what happens is you do social media reports and that gets included in the comments. Well, that's nice. I'm happy people are talking on my page. But again, there's not really a gain to that. These are just people having a conversation on your page. It's very nice.
Right.
To have comments, but that's not what we're trying to do. You don't go into this trying to get comments.
Right. Right. Good point. Well, speaking of the gist of what I've been asking about, which are the social anxieties, the social media anxieties that some of us have, others maybe don't. What are some of your philosophies about healthy usage of social media? Whether it's time spent, attitude, you know, what have you. I mean, certainly, and we can maybe start with this. Facebook has obviously become a place that a lot of people are definitely on the fence about, considering leaving, in some cases having left. You know, what is your feeling about that, for starters?
I think that's true. I think a lot of people are leaving Facebook, and I think that the one thing that still remains very useful for people in the art world is the Facebook events.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because again, the algorithms feed them to so many similar and like-minded people, and I often find out about events I'm interested in because I'll go onto Facebook and it'll tell me five of your friends are going to this one thing.
Yep.
If those are diverse friends, that could be very interesting for me. What is this event? And that's basically how I read articles now. So what happens, too, in the kind of transition of publishing is that you don't need to subscribe to a magazine anymore, right? You mm-hmm. go into Facebook, and if five of your friends share the article, you read it. That's mm-hmm. how people consume information. So I think that people are still using it that way. And I think that definitely people are moving off Facebook otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but is it possible to get off Facebook otherwise and still read those articles that you're talking about? I mean, you can't have it both ways, can you?
Why not? I rarely pay. You can absolutely not post on Facebook and just consume.
Oh, yeah. No, I guess that's not what I mean, because I usually do it the other way. I post, you know, if I have questions, and I do look at those events as you describe, but I'm not going through the wall and looking at the feeds of articles and that kind of thing. So I guess you're doing the opposite.
Well, I probably spend more time on social media than I would recommend for others.
Yeah, right. And to get back to that general earlier question, being that you are an expert, well, being that you are a social media professional, let's just start with you. How do you manage your psychology around it? How do you manage your time? How do you limit yourself to a maximum amount of time per day? Or, you know, do you unwind from social media in a certain way?
I don't limit my time. I think I definitely unwind from it in different times. If I'm taking a bike ride or working out, I'm not looking at my social, but I'm using it for so many different uses.
Mm-hmm. And do you not get hung up the way that people like me do in terms of being a little funked?
Being what?
Getting into a funk. Getting into a social media funk, you know, just it may, you know, that there's the true cliche about Facebook that it can be an emotionally unsettling or, you know, disappointing experience for one. But you don't have that experience, is what I'm getting.
Well, I really spend more time on Instagram, I would say. I think for Facebook, I use it. I do like to follow people that I grew up with or my cousins and see their kids. I like all that. I like catching up with people. I do use it more to curate information and events. And then if I'm just looking, I might be looking at Instagram or Instagram stories,
yeah,
for example. Mm-hmm. I could just sit here and watch them for hours.
Right. Yeah, and there's the time thing. So you're good.
I don't really watch them for hours.
Okay. you're being hyperbolic. Yeah.
For minutes. I watch them for minutes on end.
Right. Well, I mean, it sounds like it works for you. You know, you don't have any issues. But just for people listening who maybe do have more ambivalence, you know, or like, yeah, you know, I get into these rabbit holes, you know, and I come out and I'm like, where did all this time go? What, you know, do you have any particular insights in that regard?
You have to do your homework first.
Okay.
Right? Whatever your work is. And then I say to people, how do I fit in? I say, okay, are you in the subway? Who do I follow? One day you're sitting in the subway and you just go through people to follow. Or one day you're in the car, you're riding in the car, and you're on the bus and you craft a few posts. So that's when you're looking. So I think that, you know, the idea is to kind of use some downtime and spend some time looking on social and downtime. But if you have trouble being distracted from your work, then you have to put the phone down.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it.
Put the phone down.
And for Twitter, to go back to Twitter, because I'm hoping that people listening also identify with this. I mean, I talked with a recent guest about it. The way she described it was, there are all these conversations happening and these, you know, they get very involved. And it's like, if you're not engaged in a consistent way, you feel completely out of the loop. I mean, that's one perception of the way Twitter works. So you can address that if you'd like, but maybe my more general question is, if Twitter is lost on you for whatever reason, are there certain cases where it's worth investing the time and energy into it so that you do get the hang of it? Or would you just say, you know, nah, you know, Twitter doesn't have to be your thing?
What I would do is use the Twitter lists.
Okay.
think if you use the lists in Twitter and you're curating information, then first of all, you don't have to consume it in real time.
Right.
I know people hate me using the word curate this way. I mean, if
it doesn't
curated,
bother me.
But what you really are doing is curating your information, right?
Sure.
So you can make, like, as I said, you can make these lists. So then you can go on Twitter at a specific time and look really not, I mean, I follow thousands of people. There would be no way for me to really look at it if I didn't use the list. And then there's certain smart people who I like seeing what they say.
Yeah.
And their conversations, even though I'm such a news person, I don't really necessarily post critiques or get in little arguments or whatnot on Twitter, but I do like to read what other people say.
So if I understand, correct me if however wrong I might be, what the Twitter lists scenario looks like is you're highlighting people that you are interested in what they have to say, you've bookmarked them, and then when you come back to Twitter, you've got that particular feed of those people in front of you.
So, for example, if you go into my Twitter, there's a list that I made when I was back at Art News, and it's called News of Art.
Okay.
And in that feed, I have the New York Times Arts, the LA Times Arts, the London Guardian Arts, the Washington Post, Hyperallergic, all these different writers. So what happens is that instead of having to go to all those different Twitter feeds, I can turn on this list, which is now feeding me the tweets from everyone I put in the list. So I can have a pretty good idea of what's going on in the world of art news that day.
And
in those hours. And when I was the editor of Art News, and Twitter wasn't that big, I always knew what was happening first before other people because I was on there.
Yeah, right. Are you familiar with the Weiss link?
Yes.
Do you, I get it as well. Do you find that maybe to be the more old-fashioned version? So if you're not as concerned with how timely you're getting your art news, that that's a good way to consume it?
Yes. I mean, I think that what we find now is that it's not like the old days where you just subscribed to two things and they came to your house and then you would turn on the news at 6 o'clock or 11 o'clock.
Right.
That's so long gone, right?
Yeah.
So now, yeah, you're going to use your Twitter list. You're going to get a couple of email newsletters. I'm sure everyone gets a couple of them, right? You've got your favorite places sending you updates. There's so many different ways that we're curating our own information. And this is why I keep coming back over and over again to how important the actual content is. Because what happens is that people are absolutely barraged all the time by all these things,
yeah.
Even if you're curating the news as best you can.
Mm-hmm.
So to get your content in front of eyeballs, that's what you really have to strategize much more than thinking about the specific numbers or if you're trying to get comments or whatnot. How am I going to make content that people will respond to? That's the main thing you're trying to do here.
Yeah, right. Is there another email list that you would recommend? Because I'm not, other than the Weiss link, I'm not familiar with anything other than, you know, a particular platform's email news.
For the art world?
Yes.
I mean, there's so many different ways. UBS has an app called Planet Art that people use to curate information. And again, what happens with most of these tools is that the more you use it, the more it adjusts to you.
Yeah.
They're designed, it's just like I said before, where Instagram immediately wants to tell you which of your Facebook friends are on.
Right.
It's dying to use the algorithms to connect you and interconnect you.
So one of the things that you do in addition to your content strategy coaching, for lack of a better term, is you do mentorship. And you, I take it you work with a number of younger folks, right? People in college and younger even sometimes. Is that right?
It's really people in college and older.
Oh, people in college
that are
and older.
Young professionals in the art world.
Okay, got it. I guess I just want to, maybe I want to ask you about what kinds of things you've noticed from digital natives, you know, in terms of their approach, something other than we haven't heard already in terms of their engagement with it. I mean, we know that they're comfortable with it. We know they're very savvy with it. Is there anything or some takeaways that you've had in terms of that scenario, but also combined with the art world?
Well, I think that it's interesting because, again, the younger generations communicate through pictures, including images, including emojis.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
This is how they're doing it. Call it hieroglyphics, however you want to call it that makes it relevant to you.
Yeah.
So, again, it's thinking about all of these different platforms, the combinations of the images, of the words, of the emojis, all these other pieces. This is how people are talking now to each other. And that's what's interesting to take away. What happens is that when you get into the more business environment, it doesn't mean that the digital native who knows very well how to post on Instagram or use Hootsuite doesn't necessarily know what to write. So what I do in my consulting is more to say, like, okay, what are we talking about here? If you're an artist, what are the kinds of things that you would put on your feed? If you're a foundation, how are you rolling out your mission on the feed? So a lot of what I do is to talk about that, kind of like, what are the visual elements that you can use to communicate the talking points that you want people to know about you?
Being that you are not a digital native yourself, do you feel, you know, that there's some disconnect? Do you recognize the gap between what you are educating people about and with, and, you know, do you yet feel any kind of distance to it, being that you didn't grow up with it? You know, does that make sense?
Well, I feel like I'm very lucky because, you know, the funny thing is I can't really even work a camera. People always tell me what a good photographer I am because I'm good with the iPhone, which has an awesome camera, and I'm also good at cropping from being a magazine editor for so many years. So I feel very lucky that I kind of, that these platforms turn up that basically make it so that people that are not digital natives can figure them out if you come in with an open mind. And I find that the biggest problem for later adapters of whatever age, because we all know young people too that are just not on Instagram for one reason or another.
Yeah.
And again, no judgments. People are very busy and they could choose not to be distracted, or, you know, there's so many reasons to be on it or not.
Yeah.
But it's really trying to think about how do you want to use these pictures to tell a story. That's what the whole thing's about.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You know, certainly it can be much easier than you would think to take good pictures for some people, as you pointed out in your case. I guess to take it from the text perspective, you know, like with the texting, that is the way that young people communicate, obviously, and the hieroglyphics, as you put it, to that degree. Is there a recognition of their, you know, of that not being your expertise? Or if you text for long enough and consistently enough and prolifically enough, do you feel, does one become just as adept or comfortable? You know what I mean? Obviously, it's case by case, but generally, I guess.
Well, look, the thing is, I am really good at words. You know what I'm saying? I spent many years teaching people to write headlines. I wrote hundreds and hundreds of headlines over the years, right? In terms of kind of communicating essential parts of something in the fewest amount of words possible.
Right.
Right. The
right.
headline.
Right.
The cover line and the tweet. So those skills absolutely translate to the new one. And, you know, this isn't, you know, people managed to turn from radio into TV somehow. People, you know what I'm saying? It's like, this isn't the first time that people that didn't turn up, that weren't born in a certain kind of platform, figured out how to get onto the thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Again, with these kind of tools that we have, like our iPhones, it makes it easier and easier for civilians to do this. You know, I think what happens in all of these new media is that people are constantly, it's a little bit like spaghetti on the wall too, right? Trying to figure out,
yeah,
where is this going? What is the next thing? When this one's gone, will it be this? How will people be engaged? We must engage the public. We can't this, we can't that. And in the end, that's why I keep coming back to the words and the pictures, because even when Instagram goes away and the next thing comes, it's still going to be about talking through pictures and talking through videos.
Right.
And in fact, the one thing people agree on is that video is going to get more important.
Mm-hmm. And do you sense that from stories in Instagram? Is that becoming much more of a integral part of that usage?
Yes, because the minute you start filming things, then still photos just seem so static.
But it does take more of a time investment, doesn't it? Because there's the time investment, though, that you have to add.
There's a lot. Yeah. Yes, there's a big time investment.
Yeah.
In making them and in viewing them. Absolutely. That's why you have to think in seconds.
And we're going to leave it there. I hope you guys found that edifying and illuminating. And I would be very curious to know what you think about the things we talked about, what your strategies are for Instagram, whether they align or maybe clash a little bit with some of those. Be very curious to hear, and I'll get into more into how you can do that when I talk about the Conversation Podcast Hotline as well. I will talk about the Conversation's new episode index page, so stay tuned for that very shortly. Really quickly, I just want to remind you that this is a listener-supported show. This show continues to survive on your assistance, financially primarily, as well as otherwise. But first, I want to remind you that you can support the show financially by going to theconversationpod.com/support. You can donate via PayPal there. You can pledge on Patreon, which is a subscription service where you pay by the month. You can support the show for as little as $1 a month. If you are able to go up to $5 a month, you will become part of the conversation supporter pantheon, and I will give you all of the bonus episodes, 6 now, as well as add you to the list, and you will receive my undying love. And you can do the same via a one-time PayPal donation of $30 or more. So those financial contributions are very much appreciated. They really do keep the show going. You can also support the show, and I haven't made much emphasis on this in a while, by going to the iTunes page for The Conversation, or the Apple Podcast page, as it's often known now. That is linked through the support and contact page of the podcast as well. So find us on iTunes at The Conversation, an artist podcast, the original name we went by. And if you would be so kind as just to leave a 5-star, it really helps if we get 5-star reviews. And, you know, you can just write a quick note. Love the show. Have been listening. Getting a lot out of it. You know, just a quick sentence. And if we get enough additional reviews, that's going to help more people find this show. You've probably heard that mentioned on other podcasts. It is true. So again, if you haven't had a chance to go over to iTunes and leave us a solid review, please do. Thank you very much in advance. I appreciate it. And so now let's get on to those couple of other bits of announcements. The first one being The Conversation Art Podcast Hotline. Here is the number to call. Let me give you that number first. It's 424-256-6618. That's 424-256-6618. And what I'm looking for is just about anything. You can, starting with leaving feedback that you have about a given episode, you can share an art-related anecdote. You can talk about seeing a show that changed your life recently. You can talk about a studio find story where you found a great studio or you lost a great studio that you were working in. You can talk about a new addition to your art collection. You could talk about anything more random but still somehow relevant to this community. Anything relevant and something that you think your fellow listeners might be interested in, leave us a message. I will take any message that I think is relevant and interesting contribution, and I will start including them in the outros of the show. And that way we can have it be more of a community-based collaborative situation. You know, and until we get there, I can continue to cull from the Weisslinks, which I think are fun and illuminating as well in their own way, and maybe there'll be a mix of both. But I really would love your help in getting your feedback, getting your thoughts. And I know it's ironic following an episode about posting comments on social media to talk about leaving a message of your voice on a digital answering machine, but I think it really is appropriate for this kind of platform of an audio intimate medium. This is a way to still be intimate and yet to make it more of a community-based situation and to hear what your fellow listeners are up to. So any questions at all, shoot me an email, theconversationartpodcast@gmail.com, and I can help you out. Maybe if you're thinking about a couple of options and you want to know which one to go with, but please do give a call. That number again, 424-256-6618. I know it's going to be probably slow going at the beginning, but I'm going to keep reminding you, so no time like the present. All right, and thank you in advance for reaching out to us and leaving a message for our new potential addition to this show. Finally, I want to tell you about what I added to the website. I have over the years heard from people saying, oh, you know, I subscribed to your show. And by the way, if you haven't subscribed already on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use, please do. It really helps as well. I've heard people say, you know, I only have access to so many episodes. What about the ones before 100 or maybe even up the ones before 150? Well, now you can find them. They're all on the page, theconversationpod.com/episode-index. Or if you just go to The Conversation and click on Episode Index at the top there, you will get to this page. And starting with the most recent episode, 221, with Robin Sembelist, you can go back into the queue all the way down to number one, which was with guest Barry Zipperstein, co-recorded with Jeff Tuck, who was kind enough to let me launch this show back in late 2011 on his Notes on Looking blog, which I'm sad to say appears no longer to exist. My condolences, Jeff, and those who took over. I believe David Gilbert was one of those. But that big thanks to Jeff again, these many years later, for letting me launch the show there. So that was the first episode. And just to give you an idea, maybe from the 100 first episodes, of some names that stand out to me and might be, you might find interesting as well. Well, if you go up to 99, you've got Lisa Schiff, art advisor. 98, William Powell Haida, the artist. You've got Jerry Saltz, celebrity art critic, who we talked about in the recent episode with Maggie Kerrigan, was episode 92. Episode 78 was with an artist named Oliver McIrwin, who you probably have not heard of, but that's a really amazing episode. He joined the late infamous, well, they're still around, but the formerly headed by Doug Christmas Ace Gallery. He is no longer with that gallery. Back out of graduate school, and basically that was where his career began and essentially ended as an artist. And he got in a job as an engineer. He went back to school and got a job as an engineer. And there's a whole other story involving his father that is quite fascinating as well. So I highly recommend that one. There are, in the 60s and 70s, I did a series which was short-lived, but it was an interesting experiment called The Conversation Three-Way, where the idea was that myself and two co-hosts would sort of be a little round table where we would talk about various topics as opposed to me being the host and others being guests. So we talked about various topics for five episodes, and some of those guests included gallerist Philip Martin along with co-host Aaron Morse in episode four of that three-way, Robin O'Neill, who was a guest in an earlier episode along with Ed Shad of the Broad Museum, were in episode two, parts one and two. So I would check those out. Who else among the top 100? Episode 63 with the gallerists of Night Gallery, Davida Nemiroff and Mika Marple, you might find interesting. Dean Valentine, the fairly well-known collector, was episode 62. And the beloved curator and writer Michael Ned Holte, among other things, curated the 2014, I believe, edition of Made in LA, which is going on currently in its current iteration at the Hammer Museum. He was episode 61. So those are some highlights, perhaps recognizable names from the first 100 episodes. And they're not linked, I will tell you, but all you need to do is, when you see a name that you're curious about, plug in that name, The Conversation Podcast, in your search engine, and you should find it. It's probably going to be a Libsyn link, most likely. All right? So I hope you enjoyed diving into the archive. What else do I have to tell you before we get out of here? I want to thank you guys for your listening to the show. Do let us know what you think, ideally through the new Conversation Podcast hotline. And finally, before we go, I want to thank some folks who are helping out on the show. I'm really excited about their involvement. First, I want to thank Andy Davis, who you may have heard me mention before, who is helping shape this episode and many others as a producer and editor of how these shows are put together. And I also want to thank some folks who are helping to shape how the show is going to play out in the future. Kayla Bissinger, Megan Bickle, and Jennifer Luigis. Thank you guys so much for your help as well. All right, I think that's it for this week. For those of you who are hankering for a quintessential podcast episode with an artist and the deep dive with the artist coming up in the next episode, stay tuned. We're back with an artist guest. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. Thank you for being here. Check out those other shows on Cultural Bandwidth. Let me know what you think, and I will talk to you in a couple weeks. Ciao for now.